first is make a promise to you. It's a military thing where we talk about the three B's of a military presentation. It's be on time, be brief, and then be gone. So that's what I hope to do for you. This presentation is really talking about the healthcare disparities that exist in our nation. And this one is my one warning. I have a friend that I picked up on one of my journeys overseas, and he sits around and eats sleepers, so don't fall asleep during the presentation. When we start talking about disparities, they originate in racist ideologies. Christopher Columbus came to this nation, and what I put on behind his name is heroification. Because what we have a tendency to do is to heroify our predecessors by giving them heroic characters, giving them holidays. But Christopher Columbus came to our Central American area seven times. His second time on his voyage was in 1493, and from 1493 to 1555, he was one of the people who incited the annihilation of approximately 14 million Arawak Indians, the largest act of genocide in the history of our world. When you start looking at these kinds of things, you start wondering, you know, why are we basing our ideologies on a faulty premise? Why are we giving people sort of credence who really should not be given that credence? The next one was Woodrow Wilson, who was the first one to segregate the federal government in the post-Reconstruction period. He basically eradicated all positions for African Americans in government in Washington, D.C., where we sit now. When he did that, he actually made sure that they did not seek political positions and were not heard in congressional meetings. His wife told darky jokes in congressional meetings. One of his roommates from Princeton University, where he was president, which also shows us that racism can exceed the acumen of knowledge that you can attain in the academic institution, that he actually was the president of Princeton University before coming president. His roommate was the one who wrote the book that The Birth of the Nation was based on, the movie. Yeah. The resurrection of the Ku Klux Klan in the post-Reconstruction period. Helen Keller, on the other hand, we have as a person that we know she was blind. We know that she made Braille for us, and we know those kinds of good things, but then she was actually vilified later in her life because what she noticed was that there was a disparity that existed in society. She was blind but was able to see. What she saw was that the people who were coming to her because of blindness to learn Braille were people who were injured in industry, industrial accidents. She also noticed that most of them were poor. And she also noticed that they were prostitutes who actually developed syphilis, which was a leading cause of blindness. So she started saying that there's some kind of social inequity going on with the people coming to me, and even though I'm blind, I'm able to see this. She became one of the people who devoted money to the NAACP and its foundation, the beginning of it. She for the journal that we put out back in those days, she also became a woman's advocate for the women's suffrage movement, so she's one of the icons for the women's movement. She also was a staunch and one of these people who was really devoted to the idea of communism. But when she started talking about these different types of theories of social order, she was actually told that she was blind and deaf and had no business in getting involved with politics, because she was being told the wrong things. So we went on to, despite that, exhibiting a loving, caring nature, duty, honor, and discipline, and sacrifice, one is given scorn, personal injury, and death. That has been the history of our people who are poor in our society. That is what they deserve for serving our country, going overseas and fighting, and protecting it. And Crispus Attucks was the first one who died in the Revolutionary War. They are decried and they are outcast. Parallel processing and the evil seed of racism. What does that mean? I'm going to do an exercise with you, and a couple of people here have already gone through this exercise. What I want you to do is spell out some words for me loud, and then I want you to answer a question immediately. The words that I want you to spell out loud are drop. Next one is crop. The next one is cop. The next one is crop. The next one is cop. And we get to a green light, what do you do? That's called parallel processing. Your brain picks up on a habitual pattern and it sees everything the same way. It's a way of saving energy. So I'm a caveman in a cave and a bear comes in and I hit it with a club. The next time it's a lion, I hit the lion with a club. Good things to do. So stereotypical behavior. The next time another animal walks in and I kill it, it's my dog. So stereotypical behavior is okay in some circumstances, but sometimes you have to break through it so that you can come back to reality and respond to things appropriately. Racism equals mental illness. We must acknowledge that. It also equals moral bankruptcy, as Martin Luther King said. This is the equation that we have to break. The roots of racism run deeply into the fabric of the American conscience, corrupting the very sanctities of self-identity, happiness, and spiritual freedom. That's the cost. Racism manifests via discrimination with its symptoms of poverty, self-hatred, and mental slavery. This is me back in Iraq, and this is when we were being shelled. At this point in time, I was like out of sight of reality and saying, I don't care anymore, so I'm going to stand on the roof and let's take some pictures. But, you know, what happened here was I got to the point where I started saying, someone was asking me, I was running a combat aid station, they said, Doc, aren't you afraid of going in the field and pulling people in? And I said, let me think about that. I said, I have a bulletproof vest, I have a 9mm, I have an M16, and a helmet. I said, I don't have any of these in Chicago. So, I started having this one strange feeling that I was going back to 16 where we're invincible, you know. But it started getting kind of interesting to me how we get acclimated to our environment. Now, results of disparity anchored in the history of racism, poverty, addictions to tobacco, drugs, and food, with obesity being one of the representations of that, and diabetes that springs from it, depression and hopelessness, poor physical health, stress, suicide, truancy, loss of educational opportunity, and violence, abuse, and murder. Now, if you looked at this list, what's in common with them? These are all in the top 10. These are all related to our chronic disease state, and they all have their origins in a psychological framework. What Terry was talking about, which I thought was extremely interesting, with the Dahl experiment, is that we are actually being psychologically induced to live a life that leads to chronic disease. It's a choice. Disparity statistics. We can look at statistics. Number one cause of death, 15 to 29, homicide. Makeup of one-third of the homeless are African-American males. Make up 12% of the population, but 44% of the prison population. Average lifespan, 69 years old. Caucasian male, 68. So it's almost a 10-year span. Now, if you look at 10-year span, the number 69 is right after 65. So that means that I work for almost 40 years so that I can get 4 years of some kind of pension. I lose 10 years of pension and wealth for my family. So what's that really telling me? Where is that money going after I die? Why am I involved in a system that is not showing me not only disparity, but inequity? So it's not a question of whether I want affirmative action, it's equity. So that money should be somehow channeled from the federal government for my life expectancy, which should be based on what I'm putting it into the system for, back into my healthcare system, so I can live longer. one point. No more pseudoscience lies, the bell curve, the mismeasure of man. These are some excellent books to read because they show you the lies. This one is much more pointed with telling you what is a lie. This one just is a lie. Mark Twain's quote. He said, they're lies, then they're damn lies, and then they're statistics. We have to be very careful about numbers and statistics and what studies show us. If I'm dead on the street, it doesn't make difference to me what number I was or what my risk was. I'm dead. We have to stay reality-based to some degree when we look at these things. Conclusion, stop the attack. In other words, stop creating those doll situations. The media has to withdraw itself, feeding the monster, the media. It has got to stop influencing these kids to think that way. Because that is one of the roots of chronic disease. No more external or internal mental or physical abuse against African Americans. It's walking into the store and being monitored every time you turn around. It's going into a store and people looking down and saying, and taking their time and being disgusted and having to give you service. Those things have got to stop because they feed into the equation. Restore a blanket of social societal security, individual value, and respect. The advent of giving any kind of social relief to people and health care starts not in the textbook or in the brain. It starts in the heart. Compassion. It leads me to another equation that I sort of figured this equation out. I did some training in massage therapy and acupuncture, so Eastern philosophy medicine. And energy yang equals mass yin, and we can talk about this sometime if you want to as an equation. But the question is this a time for a paradigm shift regarding mental and physical health in our community? Is it time for us to start taking on the reins of taking care of ourselves? Because what I don't want to do is treat stage 4 institutionalized racism. I'd rather do preventive care and bring up people who are going to be healthy, who are not going to be trapped in a chronic disease system. Now, preparedness, we brought the preparedness up before, and I'll tell you something about preparedness. One of the links that preparedness should have with chronic disease is that if I have a population of people, I own a company that makes chlorine gas. So I'm afraid that, terrorists are going to come in and take my chlorine gas from me and use it for nefarious activities. But I also want to make sure it is protected. So what I'm going to do is make sure that this place is built up and I have everything I need, my fences, but I can still have an industrial accident that spills out into the local community. I can actually go through a farming town where people are poor and this train spills this gas over and kills some people. But what if that community of people has someone in there or a population of people that have asthma and they're more susceptible to this chlorine gas leak? That's a chronic disease state that's in the community that is being affected by an incident. So my link for between preparedness and chronic disease is that if I have a population of people who are better prepared from the level of chronic disease, they're going to be more resilient and or actually make a better population for an instance occurring. So preparedness, part of preparedness is making sure people are prepared for and handling chronic disease correctly. So the money that is put into preparedness, some should flow into chronic disease care. So now this goes back to Terry's note. Now note how far we have come. We've come a long way. This is a sunset over Balada Rock. When I was out there, So it's my final slide. I told you it's going to be brief and get to the point. But one of the songs that always amazed me was Amazing Grace. And sometimes listen to that song again and then realize who wrote it. It was the captain of a slave ship. He was overcome with grief about what had happened. What has to happen in this country is the moral consciousness of this country has to realize what it has created before we can change disparities. It has to accept this. Once it accepts this, then we can make a movement. And so people can change, the world can change, and if we don't come together to make this happen, we're all going to perish. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
This is certainly a different way of looking at disparities, and one of the challenges that I would like to issue to this group, particularly the Black Caucus, is we need to make sure that we begin to study models that have come down through our communities through the years. Whether you agree with them or not doesn't make any difference. But what you need to do is look at them from a scientific point of view, and if they work, we need to begin to think about that. Because from my short review of looking at some of these things, whether they be basically religious groups that espouse a vegetarian or vegan lifestyle or everything to the Nation of Islam, whatever you want to look at, we have to look at them. It doesn't matter whether they want to look at them. We need to look at them and extract from them those things that work for us. That's what we need to do. And so when we look at economic models for what has worked in our community, we need to look back through history, look at the economic models. Whether you agree with them or not is not good science. Good science is a careful using the analytical tools, assuming not too biased, analytical tools that we have that help us determine whether or not these things work.